Hello, as you listen to this, Storm Éowyn is currently passing over my head, and it is now dying down. To be fair, the wind speeds have definitely reduced, and it's probably more now affecting the west coast of Scotland. But nonetheless, there's been some images of some damage done throughout Ireland over the past couple of hours. So, this podcast episode is basically I write weekly newsletters, and the idea here is I will publish them also in audio format, but do them a week later. So basically this is the week before's newsletter. So for example, Storm Éowyn will be now a week out of date, but just bear with. I just thought it would be nice to have the newsletters in audio format as well to make them maybe more accessible if you prefer listening, or for example sticking on in the car or whatever suits you best. So anyway, back to Storm Éowyn. So there was a joke about Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland now being united because of the weather warning map, which is basically all red for the entire island, which is very rare to see indeed. So and that's because the Republic of Ireland used Met Eireann for their forecasting, and then Northern Ireland used the Met Office forecasting. So they do normally align, I think, but sometimes they don't, and sometimes there was a delay for Met Office to issue the red warning. So but eventually, basically, the entire island was on the same weather warning. So anyway, the chief meteorologist, I can't even speak. The chief meteorologist, let me, the chief dude in the Met Office, Paul Gunderson, said, "We reserve the issuing of red warnings for the most severe weather, which represents a likely danger to life and severe disruption, and that is the case for Storm Éowyn." So, it was really an unprecedented event, and I hope you stayed safe out there. There's definitely damage and a few trampolines flying about, but overall, hopefully everyone got through it unscathed. But anyway, in terms of this episode, we're going to talk about birds more. I am not a qualified ornithologist, a bird expert in any way, but I do enjoy reading about them, and I work with ecologists who are very passionate about birds, and it's always really interesting to hear about the work going on out there. So this week we're going to talk about avocets. That's AVOCETS, so they're a type of wading bird. And we're also going to talk about some of the work ongoing in the Solent in the south coast of England, just to help bird populations as well. So anyway, I hope you find this episode interesting, and I will see you soon. Thank you. So last week it was reported that an avocet was actually spotted in Belfast Lock at the RSPB's Window on Wildlife site. So if you are familiar with Belfast, you might be familiar with this Window on Wildlife, also known as WOW. So basically, the avocet is a wading bird, as I mentioned before, and I will pop a picture or I'll pop a link below just if you want to read more, and you'll see photos about of the bird as well. They have a nice curved beak, like a set of, to me, I thought they were like curved tweezers, really thin at the end with a nice curve. But I suppose you can make up your own mind on it. But it definitely makes the bill of this bird very distinctive. As expected with other wading birds, they feast on insects and crustaceans and worms and whatever else they can find in shallow water, particularly mud flats as well. But why, I mentioned about the bird being in Belfast Lock, but why actually is that interesting? And it's basically because the avocet rarely visits this part of the world. You more find it in the southeast of England, and it just makes it a rare visitor, and hence why the birders and bird watchers got very excited about this. So I'm part of a Facebook group where people who are into bird watching, they post their sightings with for expensive camera lenses that they can get really good shots from far away. And last week, an avocet popped into the group, so that's how I was notified of it. And like I said, yeah, normally found in southeast England, and it actually disappeared in England, but it was brought back through conservation efforts in the 1940s by the RSPB, so that's the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. And you might also recognise it, this bird, from the logo of the RSPB as well. So I suppose, yeah, it is, it's you probably have seen that logo a few times, so you have seen an avocet really before. And as to why this bird was found in Belfast, so it's basically known as a vagrant, so V-A-G-R-A-N-T, and this is basically just a phenomenon in biology whereby an individual animal or species appears well outside its normal range. So it's not to say that it's breeding here, it's just that it has appeared here out of its normal range. So I guess that's why there's so much excitement about birding, because there is a chance of seeing stuff that is well outside the normal range. And who knows, with climate change and different, you know, populations of food, such as fish for some species as well, different weather, you know, strong winds, you know, you never know what could end up where you are in the world. So I'm not an avid birder. I'd say I'm very much a wannabe birder, that just I have a pair of binos in my car. But yeah, I guess I understand now the excitement of seeing species like this, which are not the regulars that you would expect to see. So that's the avocet, and this kind of leads on to my next topic as well. So in the newsletter I have a section called Coastal Friendly, and the idea of this is that it's about work being done by, whether it's person, organization, company, whatever, how to kind of minimize their environmental impact on our coasts and our oceans. So I'm going to stick with the subject of birdies, and when I was reading into the avocet, I read in the work ongoing at Chichester Harbour in the south coast of England, and they actually have a really good social media page, and they post a lot about the work they're doing, and it's really, it is inspiring and really interesting to read about what they get up to, and it's a real variety of work. So I'll pop a link in the bio as well, you can check them out. But anyway, so I was reading into, well, the first page I came across was about ringing birds, and this is a process of just placing a numbered ring, which can be identified on the bird's leg. And this means, well, it should be noted that this is undertaken by a professional, so you need to go through courses to do this and be licensed to do it. So there's a bit of regulation behind this, not anyone can do it. But it's important because this bird, which is being ringed, it can be later identified, and it can be identified by professionals again recapturing birds to ring again, so for a license process, or it can just be captured by birders with binoculars or cameras. And in this case, this would be known as citizen scientists. So they can, if they get a good enough shot of the ring, or even sometimes the color of the ring, they can identify the birds. So this gives a good picture of the, I suppose, the spreading of populations, so where they travel to, but also if the same bird is spotted year on year, it gives a good indication of the survival of the species as well. And of course, if a dead bird is found with a ring, it can be also reported as well. So it ultimately, it builds up a picture of the bird's life, which is very important for research and management of species. So I was talking about Chichester Harbour as well, about them being a good example of looking after their birds. So the first thing I was mentioned there about ringing birds, so they are involved with that. But also there's a couple of other things. So that includes habitat creation. And I don't think I've actually talked about this on the podcast before, but if you're on the newsletter, you'll have heard about tern colonies, creating rafts for terns, and features that these birds will live on, but also in terms of reducing disturbance to birds as well through some initiatives. So I suppose when you're talking about harbours, they're obviously a hive of activity for humans in terms of boating and other recreational activities, and you also have, if it's in an environmentally sensitive area with lots of species like this, you really need to look at the relationship between the animals and the humans and how to kind of reduce disturbance. So what we don't want is birds being disturbed, fleeing their nests if for breeding, or even if for resting up for winter. They can expel a lot of energy escaping from, you know, predators, which you don't want to do unnecessarily. So especially if these birds are preparing for long migrations as well at the end of winter. So one of the initiatives is wildlife aware water sports. So this is part of a wider project called Bird Aware Solent. So I'll pop links in the bio about these, you can read a bit more about them. But basically it is kind of common sense. Maybe it isn't, but I think it is, and it's just kind of making people aware of, once they're aware of this, it's very easy to implement. So if you come across birds in an area like this, there's a couple of things you should do. So it's stay quiet, keep your distance, don't box wildlife in. If you're on a boat, reduce your wake, so lower your speed if you're going near the shore with birds, and keep a steady course as well, so don't be making sudden movements and changes of direction. In terms of the distance, I'm often asked, like, what distance should you leave? Really, there isn't really an answer for this. There will be guidance out there that specifies like 100 meters, for example, and all this, but it depends where you are. Like, 100 meters might not even be feasible if you're passing through a narrow channel, for example. So it's really kind of combining all these things to make sure you don't disturb the wildlife. So yeah, that's some of the things ongoing in Chichester Harbour. And that is the end of this episode. I have a couple of other things. I'll pop links in below. I was recently reading about some STEM education through offshore wind projects. So it's actually for a charity. This article actually called it Charity Scottish Association for Marine Science. I actually don't know if they're a charity, I don't know, to be confirmed. But anyway, basically a guy, David Robertson, was interviewed who is involved in an offshore wind farm project. And through their wind farm projects, he said, working with charities like SAMS, which is the Scottish Association for Marine Science, we can drive forward a focus not only for environmental and educational impact, but also help coastal and rural communities thrive. So I was just looking into, you know, how these sorts of projects can actually benefit communities as well, and it's great to see that there's education programs focused around STEM, so science, technology, engineering and maths, to inspire younger generations and bring them and educate them as well on the relevant issues of today. So I'll pop a link below if you want to read more about that. And the last thing I saw was there was a video, it actually happened before Christmas there in November, but there's a video of a skate. So if you're not sure what a skate is, it's one of those very bottom dwelling type of fish, and there was a video of it actually attacking a boat of a fisherman. So I didn't really read into it too much, but it was an interesting encounter to watch nonetheless. And I've talked about skates on the newsletter before about conservation work with fishermen. So they were overfished, and there has been work in Scotland to bring them back, because they do have a really slow reproductive rate. So if they are overfished, they're heavily susceptible to overfishing. So they're now heavily protected, and allowing them to recover. But so I made a wee joke about maybe this is just revenge for all that harm in the past. But sure, you can look into that a bit more below as well. In the newsletters, I finish off with a quote of the day. So this time I just came up with my own quote. So I said, every industry in the blue economy has a responsibility to understand their impacts on the ocean and take steps to mitigate or remove them altogether. So in terms of the blue economy, there's a lot of industries. There's tourism, there's shipping, there's energy generation, and there's seafood as well, for example, getting food from our ocean. So there's a lot of industries, and although it sounds obvious, you know, I wouldn't say every industry has been, I think it's changing now, but in the past they haven't really understood their environmental impact, and it is definitely important to understand them now. and take steps to mitigate. So by mitigate, I mean reduce the impact, or just ideally remove them altogether through, could be just change of practice, you know, change of behavior, or maybe technology and a bit of innovation is required as well. But it's something I find very interesting, and I enjoy reading about the innovation side and how people are changing their practices and technology to actually help the ocean. So that was my quote of the day. That was just one I came up with by myself. I normally add in other quotes from other smart people, experts, and inspiring people, but this week it's just me. So yes, my name is Sam Purden. You can find me on coastalcatchups.com. You can subscribe to the newsletter there. I also have a quick course, well, not a quick course, it's a 30-day course. You basically receive a lesson each day over a course of 30 days. Maybe it's a bit too heavy for you. Maybe the newsletter goes out once a week, so if you like the idea of that, you can subscribe on the website as well. I'll also pop a link in the bio for that as well. And that's me. I'll leave it there. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you're keeping well, and I'll catch you very soon.